KPBF Special Candidates Forum, and I have with me in the studio my next guest, the second candidate, and this is for District 5, Linda Hopkins. And you know, Linda, I'm sitting here looking at you, and I'm thinking about the first time I interviewed when you first ran, and here you are going for your second term, and also you're a mother of another child. It's just amazing, and congratulations to you for serving this time. And again, once again, you have to go through the process of being elected. Let's start, you know, the first question is let's talk a little bit about you. Tell us a little bit about you, what you feel proud about as far as being a supervisor for this amount of time, and also anything else that you would like to say, and what is your motivation for running a second term? I mean, my goodness, I know how much pressure has been on you, and here you are, your second round. So go ahead.
My motivation for running a second term is that I feel that there are a lot of important projects that I have gotten off the ground but not quite gotten across the finish line. You know, more than 90% of my time in office has been spent under a local disaster declaration. Mm-hmm. So we've had floods, fires. And so I've spent quite a bit of time in disaster response and disaster preparedness mode. And I've done a lot of good work there. But in some ways, that's, you know, unfortunately slow tracked some other really critical community investment projects in places like Roseland and Guerneville and Forestville that I've been working on and we're so close to. And I really just want to stay on to bring that home. I also feel very, very lucky. I honestly think the best job that anybody could have. And I love each and every single one of my 100,000 bosses. And I want to continue working hard for them and listening to the community and empowering the community. We formed the first ever municipal advisory council in the Lower Russian River and in the coast to finally empower our unincorporated areas to make decisions for themselves. We have invested more money in roads in the past 3 years per year than any time in history, right, for West County. And so I'm really proud of the more than $20 million that we have spent on West County roads in terms of empowering, you know, disadvantaged, unincorporated communities to actually have a voice and have a seat at the table. And then also making critical advances in disaster preparedness and eliminating pesticides from our public lands and from our roadsides, divesting from immigrant detention centers, from our tax dollars, which were previously going to actually go fund those companies who had kids in cages by the border. We have made critical sort of investments and sort of taken steps to greater social justice and equity, and I'm proud of that.
Well, that's a lot to be proud of. I mean, you know, when I'm listening to you, I just realize how busy the county has been, I mean, over the past 4 years. Okay, let's go into the first question, you know, and this, I know this is something that is really close to your heart and you've been dealing with for the last few months. You know, we have a homeless problem in our county, and, you know, what are some of the things that you believe that we need to do? And what are some of the things that you feel that we have done that you're proud of yourself?
Yeah. This has been an issue that I've been grappling with ever since I was sworn into office. And I really started by focusing on the Lower Russian River, which actually has the highest per capita homelessness in the county. And so when I was sworn into office, the community was up in arms about the presence of a, you know, huge number of unsheltered folks in downtown Guerneville. And I was able to, my first year in office, get $1 million of general fund during budget hearings in order to address the sudden increase in homelessness in the Lower Russian River. And in working with the community, we formed a citizens advisory committee who actually oversaw the request for proposal process and actually worked with the service providers and received data reports about how that money was being spent every quarter to sort of show whether or not it was working. And so we have actually turned the needle and nudged homelessness downward in Guerneville by about 20%. We need to do the same for Santa Rosa. And we need to step up and partner with the city. In December, the Board of Supervisors, at my urging, declared an emergency with respect to the Joe Rodota Trail encampment. And for the first time ever, we stood up our emergency operations center to actually treat this crisis like the emergency that it is. We allocated $12 million, set up a village of 60 new units out at Los Gilicos near Oakmont, hired a sort of team to actually go out and deliver the wraparound supportive services that people need to get cleaned up and get off the street. And we also are actually moving forward with purchasing multi-unit housing opportunities for people as well. So we're making steps, but there's definitely more that needs to be done. We need more of these tiny house villages, right? And we also need to stop pointing fingers at each other. Because one of the challenges about the Gibraltar Trail is it was county-owned property inside city limits. Well, now we have an inverse situation where we actually have city-owned property out in an unincorporated area next to a school in James Gore's district. We have to stop talking about jurisdictions, and we have to develop a set of county-wide policies and guidelines to address homelessness.
So is that something that you're hoping to work on in your next term?
Absolutely, and it's something that I'm already working on, but it's going to take some time, again, to kind of build out that system. But I'm hoping that we'll see some significant strides in the next few months.
Okay, well, let's go to our second question. And you know that I've been involved with this quite a bit over the years. I mean, this is really a very, very sensitive issue, but yet it's a very important issue. There is an initiative that folks hope to get on the ballot in November. It's called the Evelyn Cheatham Ordinance to repeal and replace Article 27 of the Sonoma County Code, establishing the Independent Office of Law Enforcement and Review and Outreach, ILARO. The proposed ordinance would expand the oversight authority and independence of ILARO to review and analyze the complaint against the Sonoma County Sheriff's Office, who, it's a sheriff, as we know, also acts as the coroner, and would also include and expand the Community Advisory Council, the CAC, which is currently appointed by the ILARO director. And I think that, you know, I'd like to know why it's being appointed by the director when it started out, it was appointed by the Board of Supervisor. What is your position on that, and why do you think this is an important initiative, or do you think it's just something that's a waste of time?
I think that ILARO is absolutely critical to our community. And, you know, this really came out of the tragic death of Andy Lopez, and it was a promise that was made by the Board of Supervisors at that time that they would fulfill the recommendations of the CAIE Task Force to try to address this and to prevent that kind of tragedy from happening in the future. So we need to fund ILARO. We need to actually make sure that it has the capacity to deliver on the promises that were made at the time that the department was created. And I believe that those promises are threefold. Number one, there's an audit function that needs to be performed. You know, when there is an incident or when there is a complaint filed, there needs to be an audit of whatever incident took place and make sure that there's that external perspective. But there's also a critical role in engaging with the community. And so it's critical that the director and staff and the CAC are able to actually be out in the community, hearing the community concerns. And then that feeds into the third role of ILARO, which is actually policy recommendations. There's an opportunity for ILARO to really go out and see what are the best practices in policing across the country, and how can we bring them and implement them right here in Sonoma County.
Well, there's another part to that, too, that I maybe would address. I don't understand why the supervisors are not appointing and why they've cut back. I understand. I think they had 12 positions, and now they've cut them back to 9. I mean, how can that work when you need more and more community involvement?
So I actually really support having the appointments come from the Board of Supervisors. I think that's a critical step, and I was advocating for that, and it didn't wind up being agendized on the Board of Supervisors sort of calendar, which was a little bit frustrating to me. But the good news is that I did work very closely with the ILARO director to recommend folks that came from the community that thought would be representative of diversity in West County, and kind of bring a unique perspective to the table. So I am really excited actually about the folks who are appointed from the 5th District, and I think that they're going to do a fantastic job serving on the CAC. One of the things that I think is really critical about the CAC, the Citizens Advisory Committee, is that it meet often enough, right? There was some conversation about it only meeting a few times a year, and any board worth its salt has got to meet, you know, frequently in order to actually develop an opportunity to meaningfully inform and shape policy and drive it forward.
Well, thank you. Thank you for giving such a comprehensive answer. I really appreciate that. The next question I'd like to ask you is several cities, and, you know, of course, including the Board of Supervisors, actually the Board of Supervisors just passed the Climate Emergency Initiative resolution. How do you see that being implemented? What are some of the plans you have to make sure that happens? Ideas?
Oh my gosh. This is just an issue that's really near and dear to my heart. You know, I have 3 kids. They're aged 1, 5, and 7. And what breaks my heart is thinking about the fact that they may grow up in a world that is unrecognizable to me. You know, will we have coral reefs? Will we have polar bears? Will we have kelp forests? I mean, we've seen a tremendous decline in even the health of our coastal ecosystems off the coast of California. What's going to happen to the redwoods if the weather is like this all the time, right? In the 70s in February with not a drop of rain in sight.
Can you believe that?
It's bizarre. And I was, you know, sort of joking to a friend that you can't even enjoy good weather anymore because, you know, I mean, it used to be that, oh, you get a nice day in February and you think, what a wonderful thing. And now, to me, it just kind of generates more climate anxiety where you feel like, is this the new normal? Is this what we're going to be faced with constantly?
I freak out when I see the winds.
Right? I know. It's we all live in a very different different time right now. But there are things that we can do. I really want to focus on regenerative agriculture. We have amazing working lands in Sonoma County. And if we went towards no-till agriculture, if we incentivized farmers to actually sequester carbon in the soil and to engage in holistic regenerative farming practices, less pesticides. Yeah.
What does that mean, sequester carbon?
Yeah.
I've never heard that expression.
So sequestering carbon means that you're actually drawing the carbon out of the air and actually sequestering it in the ground. So you think of a plant almost like a carbon pump, right? It takes in the carbon and it actually takes it into the root matter. And actually every time you mow, so if you have, this is why rotational grazing can actually help sequester carbon. Some of that root matter is essentially discarded by the plant. And then it then grows more root matter, which is then discarded. And through time, you can actually build up the carbon content of the soil. So you're taking the carbon out of the air and the sky and you're actually putting it into the soil. So we can do that through agriculture. We can also do it through afforestation. We could actually start planting out redwoods all the way from Santa Cruz to the Oregon border. We can work with other counties. And actually one of our biggest carbon sinks that we have are our redwood forests. They sequester more carbon sort of on a lifetime basis than pretty much any other tree in North America. So we have a huge asset and we could really help to restore our redwood forests and plant out more trees and sequester carbon. We also need to reduce our own emissions, right? We need better public transit. We need more electric vehicles. We need to electrify our transit fleet, right? So we should all be driving electric buses, riding electric buses rather than, you know, natural gas or diesel powered buses.
Well, you know, it's interesting when you think about some of the things that are going on in the world that can depress people. On the other side of it is there's so much going on that we can do, that we can build, that we can increase and make things a lot better for us. And, I mean, that's what I kind of hear.
I totally agree. You know, there's a sense of urgency about this moment, but urgency is what drives innovation, right? We have this opportunity to do things differently, to decarbonize our economy, to create a more just society as we do so, right? You know, kind of implement our own local Green New Deal.
Well, now we'll get to the last question, which is the secret question. I love secrets. You know, I love asking this question. And this is something, like I mentioned to Mike the previous interview, that this is kind of one of my sticklers, too. And I thought, if I'm doing the interview, I might as well, you know, put my 2 cents in, too. And I know it's a hard question because you're sitting on the board of supervisors right now, but... And he made a good suggestion when he said about having, you know, office hours, you know, where once a week or something that people have, you have like an open house or an open office to meet with people. So in talking with people, one of the concerns was it's very difficult to make contact with the supervisors to get private. Like I know once I tried to call and have an appointment with Jim Gore, it was like a month and a half, you know, maybe it wasn't urgent, but someone who has urgency, you know, there's no contact. It's hard to make contact. And the second thing is that there's these intense limitations on the public comment time. So what are some of your thoughts on that? And what are some of the things that you feel, if you had the opportunity, if you were just the one person on that board that could make all the decisions, what is it that you think you would do with that?
Yeah. Well, actually, the chair of the board is the one who sets how much time you have for public comment. And I believe in giving people the full 3 minutes. I think that's really critical and important. I also believe that actually the best dialogue happens around tables or at town halls. Board meetings are set up in a very awkward way where we can't fully respond to public comments if it's, for instance, an item that's not listed on the agenda. So there are all these kind of weird constraints brought about by the Brown Act. That's why I think it's really important to actually get out of the community. I attend as many community events as I possibly can. I try to hold as many town halls that offer people opportunities to get engaged and to, you know, meet me face to face. And I will stay at that town hall until the last person leaves. So people always line up and, you know, want to have a few minutes to check check in afterwards. I am there until the bitter end.
I have to agree with you. Last night we went to a town hall with Mike McGuire. It was one of the best town halls I've ever met. All he did was he gave a presentation for about 20 minutes and then just opened it up to the floor. And it was supposed to be ended at 8 o'clock, and we ended up leaving at 8:30. So I think that is a marvelous idea. Well, Linda, we're coming to the end of this interview, and I really can pick up on your enthusiasm. Are there any last words that you'd like to tell the listeners? Anything? I know you want them to vote for you, but anything other than that?
You know, I just want to add that I try to not be difficult to get a hold of. So if anyone's having a hard time getting hold of me, please send me an email. Or, I mean, I give my cell phone out like it's candy. My cell phone number is 707-483-0443. You can always text me. I gave it out publicly at town hall meetings after the flood, and I said, if you ever have a problem, reach out to me directly. I think it's critical that you have direct access to your county supervisor and that you have someone in your corner who will fight for you come hell or high water. And we've been through both in Sonoma County in the past 3 years. So I would be honored to continue serving the community. And I always, you know, I want to listen to the people and I want to bring forward the initiatives that my constituents care about. And that's what I've been trying to do for the past 3 years. And I would be honored to be able to do it for another four.
Well, thank you so much, Linda Hopkins, for being here. And thank you for, you know, the courage to run again and, you know, even to throw your hat in the ring from the beginning that you did. And I want to thank you so much for coming in. And KBBF thanks you very much for all your support.
And thank you for holding this forum, Elaine. Appreciate it.
Well, we're going to take a little musical break, and then we're going to have our next candidate with us is another one of, and dear a friend of someone that I know, Chris Corsi, who is running against Supervisor Shirley Zane. So let's listen to a little bit about the vote, and then we're going to go and get Chris, and then we'll be right back.
Now there's one thing that I don't want you to do. Let the politicians make a fool out of you. Get out and vote. Everybody needs to vote. 'Cause if you don't vote, you hurt yourself, then you can't blame nobody else. Now there's one thing I know without a doubt. If you don't want them in, you can vote them out. You got to vote. Everybody needs to vote. If you don't vote, you hurt yourself. Cause if you don't vote, you hurt yourself. You can't blame nobody else. Everybody needs to vote.
Go out and vote, 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 vote.